Welcome to the Homeschool Sanity Show, your weekly prescription for happier, healthier homeschool living. I'm your host, Dr. Melanie Wilson, Christian psychologist turned homeschooling mother of six.
Hey, homeschoolers. I just helped my son choose general education courses he's interested in taking in college. And guess what one of the options was? Astronomy. I had a fascinating conversation about studying astronomy throughout the homeschool years with Luke Gilkerson. You will want to listen in to hear more. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, the Well-Planned Gal. She has various planners for every homeschool need. A planner isn't a planner unless it is a well-planned day planner. The Well-Planned Gal, Rebecca Ferris, is a homeschool mom who has a gift and shares her talents with us in her planner series. A few of the amazing planners available are the Well-Planned Day, Student Planners, and the High School Four-Year Planner. Her newest planner is the Well-Planned Prayer Planner with an all-in-one planner and organizer. Organize your day with a focus on placing God first. Journaling 101 as well as scripture verses permeate this beautiful book. Take it everywhere, and you will have all the information you need at your fingertips. Best of all, it becomes a keepsake and wonderful guide for making prayer a priority. This journal is truly life-changing. Visit thewellplannedgal.com for more. Now for this week's topic, astronomy in your homeschool. Why should you teach it, and how can you, especially if you seem to have everything working against you in studying this science? My guest, Luke Gilkerson, and I dive into that in this episode. Luke Gilkerson and his wife, Tricia, are authors of multiple homeschooling and parenting books. They blog together at Intoxicated on Life. During his undergraduate program, Mr. Gilkerson worked in the university astronomy department as a stargaze instructor. For the last several years, he has taught astronomy at his local homeschool co-op and has now also enjoyed teaching over 1,000 students all over the world about the sky. You can learn more about his astronomy courses at experienceastronomy.com.
Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Homeschool Sanity Show. You are someone I have been wanting to interview for some time, so I am excited that we can talk today about studying astronomy. I love that topic, and it is not your typical homeschool science topic to study. Yeah. And I am all about that, you know, finding something that is unique and interesting for me as a homeschooling mom, as well as my kids. So Before we jump in, though, I would love for you to tell us more about you and your family.
Well, my wife and I, Tricia, we've been married for a little over 10 years now, and we have five wonderful boys. And they are, we have, you know, homeschooling all of them. And, well, except for the baby right now, because he's a baby. we're homeschooling all of them, and we absolutely love, we love the task of homeschooling. I am what I consider a homeschool dad. Not just because my kids are homeschooled, but because I am intimately involved in the homeschooling process. Ever since I started working from home, my wife and I both work from home, so both of us are very entrenched in the day-to-day stuff of homeschooling, which has been a real adventure for both of us, but especially, I'd say, for me, because though my wife has been kind of doing this from minute one since their kids were little, for me, it's sort of a brand new part of my own homeschooling journey, because I've only been a work at home guy for a couple years now, and so since that time, it's been interesting to adjust to from the go to the office kind of lifestyle to, you know, wake up with the kids and get the kids ready and teach them how to read and, you know their addition and subtraction facts and stuff like that. It's a very different kind of life. But it's absolutely wonderful to do too, because I get to spend so much more time with my kids. And that's actually one of the main reasons why we chose to homeschool, is because we wanted we wanted the extra time with our kids. We wanted to be able to build into their lives, to spend more time, just more quality time and a more quantity of time with them. And so that's been a big part of our journey. My wife and I both work for ourselves. We have a company called Intoxicated on Life, which is a company providing a lot of parenting and homeschooling resources for Christian families. And so we've got a ton of books that we've been writing, and courses and those sort of things. We're constantly pumping out new material every year for Christian families, for homeschool families. And it has been a lot of fun to go on a journey with other homeschool families through the resources that we produce, and watching their families flourish more because we're able to provide something that eases what they're doing or provides more insight into how to do something better. So that's a lot of what we do.
All right. Well, you know, of course, that many homeschooling moms are drooling at the idea of having their husband home and doing some of the homeschooling.
Oh yeah, it's definitely its own. It's definitely a blessing. There's no doubt, and I know it's a blessing to her, but it's a blessing to me too. And I know that not everyone has the freedom or wherewithal to be able to work from home and have that kind of flexibility and those sort of things. For us, it's been, you know, it's certainly not something we started out doing. It was something that I never would have expected to have that kind of flexibility, you know, say 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. I never would have thought I had that kind of flexibility. But I recommend that, you know, if you can do it, if you can have that kind of flexibility, if you can find a way to make a living from home, the flexibility, not just for the sake of homeschooling, but for the sake of life. It's a very busy, industrious, fun, flexible life of being able just to, you know, not just be around your family a whole lot more, but also to pursue the kind of things you like to do from your own home. And so it's a great way to live, for sure. It definitely comes with its challenges, though. That's something I was not prepared for. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes easy, I think, for when you work away from home, you can kind of bifurcate your life pretty easily. You've got your work life, you've got your home life. I don't think I realized just how impatient of a man I was until I started actually being a teacher to my children. It's been a taxing thing, but it's also been a wonderful thing too, because the Lord has been honing my character through my own children. So it's been good. Mm.
That's for sure. I can relate to that as a homeschooling mom. And I'm actually thinking that we need to have take a homeschool dad to school week, so every homeschooling dad can see what it's really like.
Oh yeah, that would be fun. You could have, you know, do a little take your child to work. Yeah,
right.
Have children take their fathers to school.
That's right. That is right. Well, we actually have a number of things in common. I don't know if you know this, but I have 5 boys as well.
Yes.
So,
mm-hmm.
Welcome to the club with that.
Moms of boys, parents of boys. Parents of girls, I love it, you know, but I don't have any daughters. And mm-hmm. So for me, I never would have, years ago before I got married, I not only didn't picture myself as a father, I definitely did picture myself as a father of 5 children, and least of all father of 5 boys.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd have a girl mixed in there somewhere if I was going to be a dad, but this has been it's a rough, rowdy house with lots of noise and lots of craziness, but it's fun.
It is a lot of fun. Okay, so you've kind of talked all around it, and there are so many fascinating kind of offshoots that we could take today,
sure.
But we're gonna cover astronomy, I promise. But before we do that, I would love to know why you and your wife, Tricia, decided to homeschool to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, as I mentioned, one thing was just the time we get to spend with our kids. That was a big one. I think initially one of the catalysts that was really a big thing for us was just the quality of education, the flexibility of education. You know, when our oldest was, he was just 3 years old, and then, you know, approaching 4, he was an academically ambitious kid. He, you know, from a very young age wanted to learn how to read. He wanted to learn about all kinds of things. He wanted to learn about the world. And just through casual day-to-day kind of interactions with him, he learned, you know, he was learning how to read, you know, in the, you know, it's just sitting at the dining room table, or, you know, in the bathtub. You know, we'd draw a letter for him and he would quickly learn. And because he was picking things up so quickly, when we started considering schooling options, you know, do we want to put him in, you know, I think we put him in the local preschool group or whatever, and that was fine. It was mostly just fun and games. But then when we're considering, you know, okay, now we're going to kindergarten, what are we going to do? It was, you know, we started looking at what they were going to do in the kindergarten class. We're like, he already knows all this stuff. And the last thing we wanted is to just sort of stifle his education by putting him into an academic system that was going to put him into a box. And so for us, it was academic rigor that was a big part of that decision, was to say, okay, well, let's homeschool in the first year and see how it goes and just see, you know, how he does. Well, first year came and went. It went very well. We enjoyed it. And then the next year came and we said, well, let's do it again. So we started taking it a year at a time. Eventually, we got to the point where we said, you know, this is working out really well for us. We started having, you know, of course, more kids came along, and we realized this is a lot more reasons why homeschooling was a benefit. We talked to a lot of people who put their kids in the public school system, and we didn't like the stories we were hearing coming out of the public school system in our area, at least. I know not all public school systems would be like this, but just some of the environment of the public school. We started realizing that it wasn't the best environment to put our kids in. So that we added that as a reason why we wanted to continue homeschooling. In addition, I would say that for us anyway, private education around here, there's not many options in that arena. I know for some places you live, there's a lot of options for charter schools and private schools and all kinds of, you know, really good educational options. For us, there wasn't a whole lot of options there. So, you know, for us, we didn't have to really even consider that as a potential, even though maybe we could have driven our kids a ways away and paid all kinds of money to do it. But at the time, we weren't financially able to do it. Our time schedule didn't allow it. So we said, okay, let's homeschooling it is. And since then, we have become, I'd say, big homeschool advocates. We have, you know, we started doing homeschooling mostly just out of a let's see how this works out. And now we strongly advocate for homeschooling because we think it's a wonderful way to educate children. We think it's a wonderful environment for children to be educated in, provided you put in the work to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not necessarily a plug and play kind of education option for kids. You know, kids are all different,
right?
And so you have to, and when you're so close to them, you know, working so closely with them in a homeschool environment, you have to, you know, roll with the punches with each child and really see what's working and what's not working. It's not just a you know, just let them do what they're going to do kind of thing, or just throw a book in their lap and hope that they learn from it. Mm-hmm. So it takes work, it takes serious thought, but when you put in the time, when you put in the thought, it really is worth it. It's a lot of fun.
It definitely is. Well, that was wonderful. I love hearing people's reasons for choosing homeschooling because just like our kids, they're all different.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you for giving me that explanation. Okay, now we're going to shift gears and we're going to talk about astronomy. Why astronomy? You know, none of our kids are going to be, you know, asked why there's no astronomy on their homeschool transcript, right?
Sure.
So it doesn't seem like it is a critical subject area to have our kids study. So why is it important, do you think?
You know, that's a great question. I think there's a lot of reasons why astronomy is a good science to study. For one, I would say that when you talk to children, there is a they have an interest. Many children have a keen interest in the natural world and the world around them, and the sky especially. It's one of those things that most people in general, they love the fascination of being able to just go out on a clear night and look up at the stars and to see the stars, the sun, you know, the sunset, sunrises, the moon, the very planets in the sky. They think all that stuff is really interesting. And then when you start talking to them about deep space stuff, black holes and neutron stars and all kinds of crazy things, they get very excited about that stuff. Most children I know, I've taught astronomy for years in our homeschool co-op now, and I have yet to have a class where not 100% of the students were totally engaged with the subject. They think it's fascinating. So I would say, from a parent's perspective, if you want a subject that's going to naturally hook your kids in and get them excited about not just the subject matter, but all the other things the subject matter is going to lead to, I think astronomy is a natural, kind of one of those naturally interesting subjects for a lot of people, for a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be the first thing. The second thing I'd say is astronomy has its hooks in so many other disciplines. By studying astronomy, it hooks into the history of classical civilizations, history, mythology, obviously not just the subject of science itself, but mathematics, literature. It's fascinating how many works of classic literature, for instance, integrate the subject of astronomy into the writings, because many people from pre-modern times had a much better grasp of the sky and how the sky works and how it regulated their daily lives, more so than we do in the modern era. So it's just sort of, you can find it woven through the writings of Dante and Shakespeare and Homer. And I would also mention the Bible as well. It hooks right into the Bible very naturally, because the people who wrote the Bible, the penmen behind the Bible, also had a very intuitive grasp of the sky, because it was something that regulated their daily lives. From the perspective of an integrative subject, if you're looking for something that's you're gonna be able to tie in a lot of other to, astronomy is a really neat subject to do that, and it does it very, very well.
All right. Well, that was an excellent answer. And I can add to that I have an elementary language arts curriculum called mm-hmm. Grammar Galaxy, and the cover of the books has a space theme, and children are naturally attracted to that cover. So I know what you're saying is true, that kids are fascinated by space. And so as homeschoolers, we can take advantage of that fascination and provide them with an excellent education about astronomy. Okay.
Absolutely.
So we want to do this, but what if we can't afford an expensive telescope? Can we still study astronomy?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, both of the courses, I just teach different levels of course. I have an elementary course that I teach online. I also have an upper level course that has a couple different tracks, one for junior and senior high. None of them require a telescope. None of them require any sort of observational equipment at all.
Okay.
Of course, if you already own a telescope, or if you already own binoculars or something like that, fantastic. But nothing that I require in my courses needs any of that. And there's a good reason for that, and primarily because the kind of astronomy I'm talking about is not, you know, the study of distant galaxies and quasars and neutron stars and black holes. We're talking about the study of classical astronomy, the astronomy that ancient people did as part of their everyday lives. You know, sunrises and sunsets, moon phases, being able to identify specific constellations in the sky and when those constellations are visible at which times of year, and how those observations regulated everything from the calendar systems they used in order to, you know, sort of govern what they did and when they planted and harvested and when they had celebrations and, you know, all those kind of things, as well as just basic timekeeping, or for that matter, navigation. How do I use the stars to find north, south, east, and west? That's the kind of astronomy I'm talking about. This is something that can be done from your backyard. Not necessarily, you know, you don't necessarily need to be able to go to an observatory or to buy an expensive telescope, or for that matter, even a cheap telescope, in order to do. You can do this from the comfort of a lounge chair in your backyard.
Okay. Well, you know, I was raised in South Dakota, which I have described as living in a planetarium at night.
Yeah.
In South Dakota, it does look like you are in a planetarium. The sky above you is, you know, it goes from horizon to horizon overhead. It's dark enough when you're driving at night. It is incredible. And now I live in a well-lit suburb, and I can't see much of anything. So what do you tell families who are like mine, who live in a light polluted area and have trouble exposing their kids to the stars?
Sure. Well, there's a couple different things you can do. First of all, I would try to do, we have actually an activity in one of my courses where it's a magnitude test. Magnitude is just a term for the metric we use for how bright a star is in the sky. Specifically, apparent magnitude is the apparent magnitude or the apparent brightness of a star in your sky. So that's going to be different for everybody, right? If you're living in a well-lit suburb, the number of stars you're going to see is going to be significantly diminished than if you lived out in the country or if you lived, you know, in somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And that is, so just take note of what can you see. For start by, what can you see? Often the most observable obvious things that are in the sky, for instance, the major constellations. The reason why they're major constellations to begin with is because they're made up of some of the brightest stars. So even in some well-lit areas, they can still very easily see a dozen or couple dozen major constellations. They can't necessarily see all of the stars of that constellation, but they can certainly see the brightest ones. In fact, for the novice, you know, for the very beginner astronomer, for someone who's just getting into doing astronomy, sometimes it's easier to pick out constellations in a more well-lit area than it is out in the country. Because out in the country, you get up there and you just look up in the sky and you just see stars everywhere. Like, what am I looking at?
That's true.
But when you look up in a more well-lit area, often you're looking in that you can only see, if you just stare in one direction, you may be able to see 10 stars, 20 stars. Well, chances are those stars are part of a major constellation that you can pick out the shape of. So I would say, first of all, just go out in your own yard and get a sense for what can you easily do. Second, I would do whatever it takes for you to do in terms of your eyes to adjust to the dark. You may live in a well-lit neighborhood, that's true, but is there a part of your yard that is shadowed from a lot of lights? If you can find a part of the yard where you're not going to be, where a street lamp or a light from another house is going to be constantly invading your vision, your eyes will be able to adjust to the dark. And even though the sky above might be kind of blotted out with a lot of glow from the sky glow from the city, once your eyes adjust, you'll be able to see a whole lot more once you get into a darker corner of the yard. So explore your own yard to find that darker corner. Third thing I would say is, even in the event of being unable to see many stars, there are actually some fantastic free computer programs that you can get that you can use as a sort of virtual planetarium. So if you want to introduce your child to the sky but feel like they're not quite seeing enough, you can actually use some of these online free planetarium resources that enable them to manipulate the sky, to see the basic shapes of the constellations, to see how the sky changes over the seasons and throughout the various months of the year. So you can use some of the tools like that in order to do that. In addition, if you can even download some free and sometimes some fairly cheap apps for for your tablet mm-hmm. or for your iPhone or Android phone or whatever that allow you to point your tablet or phone in the direction of a certain place in the sky and see the constellation that would be there if, for instance, if the sky was a little bit too lit up for you. That again, it helps to acquaint the child with the basic shapes of the constellations and how the sky is laid out. The cool thing about some of those apps and those online programs is that because you can manipulate the sky, it even gives I think it even gives kids a greater sense of mastery of mm-hmm. what they're looking at, as they realize, oh, there's a whole sky under my feet that people on the other side of the world can see that I can't see right now, or mm-hmm. Let's say it's a. I live in Michigan, and my area of Michigan is not known for clear skies mm-hmm. very often. I mean, we have cloudy skies all the time. So talk about terrible for astronomy. If you get there's some weeks that go by, I can't see anything in the sky, just nothing but gray clouds everywhere. Mm-hmm. But even then, using those kind of applications, using those online resources, you can still do the work of astronomy, just maybe not the same way that our forefathers did.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So you have convinced me that it's valuable to study astronomy and that my child can study it, even if we mm-hmm. don't have a telescope or a great weather, great lighting to mm-hmm. look in the sky. So how would I go about it? What is the best way to start teaching astronomy to a younger kid, for example?
Sure. So if you're talking like elementary age kids, there's a couple things you can do that would be really helpful. One thing to do would be to expose your kids to some really good living books on the subject of astronomy. There's a number of really good books out there that are geared towards younger kids. A lot of them, for instance, in the True Space series, really, really good books that are just really, really fun books for kids to read on planets and constellations and stuff like that. You can do all kinds of things there. In addition, you can read a lot of books that are, for instance, books on mythology that say you wanted to learn about the constellation Orion. Well, there's a whole lot of mythology out there, and I'm not just talking about the Greek mythology. I'm talking about mythology from many ancient cultures out there that ascribed some sort of a picture to that specific group of stars in the sky and told stories about it. So you can use those kind of things as read-alouds, or even as independent reading that provide kids with just a general sense of here's what the sky is like, or here's how ancient people understood the sky. I've got long list of recommended books on experienceastronomy.com that give parents ideas about some really good resources they can do as far as reading. As far as other activities that would be good is to find opportunities to take your kids outside to just make simple observations of the sky. It could be as simple as once every other week, or even once a week if you have the time. Go out, stand in the same spot in the yard, face the same direction. So find the best spot to view the stars in your yard, face the same direction. Preferably, if you live in the northern hemisphere, I'd say facing either facing south is probably the best way to do it, face south, because there you're going to see the most change over time. Face south, if you live in the northern hemisphere, face south, and then just take note of what constellations you can see. If you want to use some of those apps that I talked about earlier, or an online program to help you identify those things, go out, just observe what you see, and draw it out. Have your child draw what they see in the sky. If you do that, if you take just once every other week or once a week and go out and simply take 20 minutes just to observe what you see, and maybe after that you come inside and you get some hot chocolate and you sit around and you read about a mythology story of that specific constellation or something like that. If you do just that, your child will know more about astronomy at the end of a school year than most people in the world know about astronomy today, because they will have a firsthand viewing of the sky. They will have been able to look out, see those kind of things in the sky, see them with their own eyes, see the basic shapes of things in the sky. And like I said, with all the with these different applications you can get today, it's never been easier to identify constellations in the sky and not just look up at the sky and be daunted by this endless ocean of white dots in the sky. You can actually go out and easily identify these things and teach your child to identify them. That would be, you know, even if you didn't want to use a curriculum, if you didn't want to use anything else, if all you wanted to do is just go out and do firsthand observation of the sky, that alone will give your child a fantastic kind of grasp of some of the basic things to see in the sky. It may not tell them all the whys and the whats and what exactly am I looking at and what's going on, but it will give them a kind of intuitive grasp that ancient people who are just doing astronomy from their own backyards or from their fields would have been able to do, being able to recognize basic shapes and here they are and here's where they are, here's where they're moving and here's when they rise and set. That kind of stuff would be, I think, a really good approach to teaching astronomy.
Okay. What about with teens and high school students? Do you recommend any added, you know, things to do to enrich their study?
Absolutely. I would say basically the same kind of things I'd say for younger kids, but there you get to, I think, teach a lot more of the why behind the astronomy. So, for instance, a really good textbook that I have myself recommended and that we sell on our website, experienceastronomy.com. It's written by a guy named Jay Ryan. He wrote a wonderful textbook called Signs and Seasons, and it gives in very beautifully laid out, beautifully illustrated textbook explaining exactly why we see what we see in the sky. I would use it basically as an addendum to the going out and doing star observations, you know, once a week, once every other week kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, give your child a drawing pad, you know, with nice drawing paper. Have them go out once every other week, once a week, date what they're drawing, face the same direction, stand in the same spot in the yard, and draw the stars that are kind of there, right there in their field of vision, right in front of them on the, you know, towards the south. Then have them read various corresponding things in the textbook. What that does is it gives them an understanding of, well, why is it that I saw Orion this winter, but when I went out this summer, I couldn't see him at all? Where is he? Where did he go? Why is the sun rising and setting different places on the horizon? I never noticed that before, but now when I'm going out, I'm noticing that the sunrise and sunsets are different times and in different places. Why is that? And so it gives you some sort of ideas of what to do there. In addition, I've actually created a field guide that any family can use, even if you don't take my courses, that you can just grab. It's just a spiral bound field journal that kids can just simply are given direction. Go outside at this time, look up in the sky, draw what you see. Go outside at this time, look up in the sky, draw what you see. Get some specific instructions of what to do.
Okay.
If you do that on a, you know, a weekly basis, you're exposing kids to those kind of things. And if you're giving them just a really good textbook on teaching the why behind it, again, they're going to walk away knowing a whole lot more about astronomy than most people in the world know.
Mm-hmm. That is really neat. You know, you mentioned something with respect to books, you know, living books to have your kids read while they're studying astronomy, that gives me another question I want to ask you, and that is, you mentioned mythology. There are a lot of topics in astronomy books that can make Christian parents feel uncomfortable. Things like astrology, you know, that often gets confused with the word astronomy, as you know, which is more like fortune telling, you know, and then the mythology. But then we can also get into Big Bang. Does the universe, this, you know, what we see in space, tell us that the Earth is very old? So there are all these topics that we might not know how to kind of navigate as Christian parents. Do you have any advice for us on that?
Well, I think there's probably a couple different kind of sets of issues there that are going on. One, I think, is the astrology issue, and one is the age of the universe kind of stuff. They're two. The parents tend to have issues with those things for kind of different reasons. First of all, I would echo some of the concern parents would have about certain parts of mythology. There are, you know, for instance, the mythology of the Greeks is anything but tame and clean. So they're not you know, it's not a you know, it's a story of gods and goddesses warring and doing inappropriate things with each other. So it's not necessarily the cleanest, you know, thing in the world to just hand your kid a book of Greek mythology. There are, however, some really well-written books out there that are written specifically for children that get around a lot of that stuff. It still faithfully teaches a lot of the stuff about the mythology, but it avoids a lot of the more scandalous portions of the stories that the parents might be concerned about. So find some good books. I have some recommendations on that, but find some good books that are written more towards children as far as the mythology is concerned. As far as astrology goes, I think this is a very easy thing to talk to your kids about, because the Bible does. The Bible is pretty straightforward about how we treat astrology, how we treat fortune telling, how we treat the kind of disciplines that almost every single ancient culture that was around ancient Israel long ago did. They practiced these things, and the Bible is pretty straightforward about talking about these things. And actually use that. I would say use that as an opportunity to teach your children about those very subjects. Say, look, these are, you know, Genesis 1 already teaches us what the stars are for. What are they for? To give light on the earth, to help us mark the days and the years, to help us mark the signs and seasons in the sky. You know, they're there for helping us to keep time, to make calendars, to navigate, those kind of things. Very practical reasons that God gave us the stars. Very, very practical. Versus all these other cultures around Israel at the time, they were using the stars to do other things, to try to add meaning to their lives, to predict the future, to give some sense of direction to their lives and be able to foretell what they should do or what is going to happen to them. That kind of thing, the Bible speaks against, because it's simply false. It's simply not true. So use astronomy as an opportunity to teach your kids what the Bible already says about this stuff. And that's good. They need to know those things, because they're going to run into all kinds of garbage out there about horoscopes and everything else. They're going to run into all those things. And so it's good for them to know, what does the Bible say about that stuff? As far as the age of the universe stuff, that can be really thorny, especially as you get into some of those living books. And again, I would try to gravitate more towards books aimed at children, especially if teaching young kids, aimed at children. Even if it's going to mention, every now and then, sometimes those kids' books, they don't necessarily get into all the ins and outs of the age of the universe, but you might from time to time find those little brief mentions of, you know, 4.5 billion years ago this happened, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Have these little brief mentions in there. Again, use these as opportunities to teach your kids about different worldviews. And even a young mm-hmm. child can have these conversations. Say, look, there are different people who believe different things out there. Sometimes they believe what the Bible teaches about this. Sometimes they don't. And then when they write their books on astronomy, they assume that the Bible's incorrect. Mm-hmm. So I would, again, use these as opportunities to engage a child at their educational level, whatever is appropriate for them to understand, but engage a child along these discussions. And teach them, you know, when you hear things like that, ask them a question. What do you think about that? Do you think that the world is that old? You know, and maybe they say, well, I don't know. Or, well, it seems like the world's a lot younger than that, because in the Bible it says whatever. Mm-hmm. Get them to dialogue with you about that, so that when they run across those things, and they're going to do that, of course, in their advancing mm-hmm. education, they're going to run into these kind of things all the time. So use it as an opportunity to spark those discussions with your kids. And you can do that even from a very young age. You can start having those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a great answer. I think it can be, you know, used for your theology studies, for your worldview studies, mm-hmm. definitely history, as you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation. So there is so much that can be taught mm-hmm. within the context of astronomy. And you have mentioned that you've created courses that teach astronomy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What inspired you to do that? Were you just fascinated with the topic, or why did you create a course?
Well, it did start with a fascination with the topic, for sure. I've been, ever since I was a kid, I remember loving astronomy. I was the nerd in high school who, you know, joined the local planetarium society, the local observatory society, you know, whatever. I was the kid who did that. When I got to college, got my dream job. I worked at my university's local their observatory and planetarium. I was on staff there, and so I was every week or so taking college students up to the roof of the astronomy building, opening up the big dome telescope, the half-meter telescope, and pointing it at different things in the sky and showing them different things. I was, you know, leading these stargaze talks for, you know, Astronomy 101 students. And it was a lot of fun to do that kind of thing. And so it started with a fascination with astronomy on my own. And then I started teaching astronomy to both the elementary kids as well as the high school kids in our local homeschool co-op. And over time, I sort of developed a curriculum of sorts that I was using with the kids. I was teaching them various things in the about astronomy through this curriculum that I was more or less developing year in, year out. As I taught more and more groups of kids, I'd refine it and make it a little better and take certain things out and add new things. And eventually, it was my wife, actually, who prompted me. She said, why don't we create a course online? I bet you there's more families that would really like to study astronomy, but they parents have no idea where to start. Mm-hmm. And I said, no one's going to want to do that. I mean, like, it's one thing when you're sending your kids to co-op and it's the thing that's there, it's the default, whatever, and okay, fine, I'll send my kids to astronomy. But I'm like, no one's going to want to do that. And I put it off, and finally she talked me into doing it. So I created, my first year I did it, I created a full school year video course, 35 videos that are meant to be done once a week, about 20 minutes long each, that teach junior high and high school students about astronomy. And it's really a field work course, so that there's the lectures and then there's the field guide portion where they're actually going out once a week and they're drawing what they see in the sky, and I'm giving direction on how to do all that. I really saw it as really important that whatever the kids were getting in the classroom or the video lecture portion, that they were following up on and actually going out and seeing it with their own two eyes in the sky. And so that's what we created. And so I started out with that. I had no idea how it would be received. To my surprise, it was very well received. And now, you know, hundreds and hundreds of kids from all over the world have been through that course, which has been really exciting to see. I mean, we've had students from I'm here in America, but we've had students from all over the Northern Hemisphere take that course, from as far away as, you know, India and other places, you know, on the other side of the world, people are taking the class. And it's a lot of fun to watch students get excited about astronomy. And so it's been a wonderful opportunity for us to watch kids around the world get excited about it.
Mm-hmm. I bet. Well, I just have to say that I am very impressed with the content that you have put together. The videos in particular are very professional and original content. So you're not just borrowing YouTube videos and you're not just, you know, sitting and talking at the screen. You are teaching, but you know, the videos are just like what you might see on television when you're watching a documentary. So very well done. I am super impressed, and I can see why you're getting a great reception to those courses. Plus, there is you have downloads for students to use with those lessons. And mm-hmm. what I was also very impressed by was you help students to focus on what you want them to remember. So you have like memory helps as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's I mentioned the high school, the junior high and high school level course. The elementary course, we focus, that was what we came out with just this last year. We added the elementary course. And that one is very, very particularly, we really try to focus on memory work mm-hmm. with that one.
Right.
So we really try to drill that. So we provide flashcards for the parents to use with their kids. In addition, every lesson contains a memory video where I, again, address the students again, and I tell them, here are the things you need to be memorizing from the lesson. And I walk them through. This is exactly what the memory, this is what each thing you need to memorize. By the end of the school year, if students have you know, applied themselves to it, they will have memorized well over 50 different astronomy facts, as well as two whole psalms from the Bible, Psalm 8 and Psalm 19, that they will have memorized from the Bible. And it's a lot of fun to watch the kids. I mean, right now, actually, in our course, we just put our first classroom of students, our first round of students through the elementary course. The upper level course has been going on for a couple of years, but we just had the first round of elementary students. They're finishing up the course now, and we're running a contest with the young kids, asking them to show off what they memorized throughout the school year. So parents are taking little, you know, iPhone videos and giving them to me of these kids who are spouting off all these different, you know, dozens of astronomy facts. They're able to just tell you exactly, you know, how many miles away is the sun and how many moons, you know, what are the names of the four largest moons of Jupiter and whatever. You know, they're able to do all that stuff because they've spent the school year really memorizing it. You'd be so surprised how much these kids can memorize. It's amazing.
It is amazing. And I also love that this is very multimodal learning. So if you have a child mm-hmm. who, you know, wants to do, is more of an auditory learner, if they're a visual learner, if they're an active learner, you have all those bases covered. So I am very impressed with this course called Experience Astronomy. So I have a feeling that people listening are just asking, okay, where do I sign up? what's involved? Because this sounds great. Getting my kids to memorize scripture and to learn more about a topic that is so fascinating that they could even educate grandma and grandpa on the topic. I just know people are going to be interested. So tell us what else we need to know about the course.
Everything you need to know about it's going to be found at experienceastronomy.com. And there you can actually go. At the very top of the page, there's actually a link that says preview. And that, when you click that, it'll ask for your email address. And then you can preview for both the elementary course and the upper level courses. You can preview the lessons. So what's nice about that, I understand that for a lot of parents, when they're making like a big video curriculum purchase, they want to be able to see what they're going to get. Mm-hmm. So the preview actually allows them to observe a sample of the lessons from both the upper level and the elementary course to kind of get a sense of what are they going to get when they get into this course. The elementary course we recommend for elementary ages, so about 6 to about 11, somewhere in there, years old. Of course, we've had kids of all different ages can take it, obviously, but it's geared towards those elementary ages. The upper level course is geared towards ages 12 and up, and the upper level course is good for junior and senior high. We also have an advanced track that is specifically for the high school student who's looking for high school credit.
Okay.
And that's the track where we not only get all the stuff that's in the basic course, you know, the video lectures and the outdoor field guide stuff, but they're also going to get access to exclusive live lectures from me. I teach, I think, 6 different live lectures throughout the course of the school year. And they're also going to get access to a number of additional assignments, you know, papers that they're going to write, field trips they can take, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And allows them to choose from a variety of different assignments that once they've completed all that coursework, they're going to get a certificate of completion at the end of the school year that says they've, accumulated enough hours for high school credit.
Okay.
So they can get all that stuff at experienceastronomy.com. They can see all the different details.
Oh, that's wonderful. And how else can my listeners connect with you?
The main website that my wife and I blog at is intoxicatedonlife.com, which is a really goofy name for it. Was had I known I was going to be traveling the country and doing going to homeschool conventions and churches and stuff like that, I probably wouldn't have chosen a domain with the word intoxicated. But yeah, there it is. But it's actually just started out as our personal blog 5-6 years ago, and it's developed into a resource for a lot of Christian parents and homeschoolers and stuff like that. And we blog about all kinds of topics germane to those to Christian parents. So I would say go to intoxicatedonlife.com, and you can see a number of the resources and the articles we've written there.
And I highly recommend that you would subscribe to Intoxicated on Life as well, because the email that you get, you're going to want to open. Luke and Tricia tend to take on more controversial topics than I am willing to take on. So you will probably love opening up their emails just like I do. Well, Luke, this was fantastic. So interesting to get to talk with you personally. And I am hoping that you will come back and we can talk about one of those more controversial topics in the future.
Yeah, I would appreciate that.
Be sure to visit experienceastronomy.com. Thanks again to our sponsor for bringing you this episode of the Homeschool Sanity Show. Find the planner that's right for you at thewellplannedgal.com. That's all for this episode. Join me next time for an interview with Dr. Georgia Purdom of Answers in Genesis. Have a happy homeschool week.
Thank you for joining me for the Homeschool Sanity Show. This has been a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.